extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Hello, folks. Greetings and welcome to Extra Time here in East Harlem. I'm Matt Doyle, joined, as always, by my partners in soccer, Tom Bogert, Dr. Vibes himself, to my left. To my right, the doctor of nothing, Stefano Fusaro. How you boys doing?
We're good. We're good. Like you mentioned, we mentioned before, you know, it's not a... I'm a South Florida guy, so I could be a doctor of a lot of things. It's just all really, really shady things that are
yeah,
that we talk
handing
about.
Out yeah. prescriptions.
Can't be verified by anybody or anything, but it can be said very confidently.
Yeah, I am in the big chair. That's why I'm saying everything confidently today. Andrew Wiebe is still on vacation in Portugal on a boat, drinking, alternating between white wine and beer so far, it looks like, is the entire vacation for him. So I hope he's having fun. David Goss, parts unknown. At this point, we have not heard from him in the group chat for a few days. I assume he is celebrating that huge Knicks preseason win over the Celtics.
Of course, that's what he would
Tom,
be doing.
I got zero texts from you, Tom.
I was talking to somebody the other day who was like, oh, yeah, I was actually just at the Knicks. Like, I was in the area, so I went to the Knicks preseason opener. I was like, you're a madman.
Yeah.
Absolute madman.
Preseason basketball is not great.
We talk about we talk a lot about sickos here. Preseason basketball is pretty sicko.
Into the city. This is not somebody who lives in New York City or the surrounding area. This is somebody who...
Well, that actually makes more sense because that's like a night. It's a night in the city, right? You get to go to
that. But that was why. That would like I see what you're saying. Strong disagree. Like it was that was all this person did.
All right. Well, Tom would never leave Asbury Park if it were up to him. It is NBA preseason. As we just said, it's also MLS award season. The ballots went out yesterday. I haven't filled mine out yet. We'll hit that on the shows next week. I think we're going to do
I feel strongly that I will never file a ballot before the season ends. I was giving Stefano some sick about this yesterday.
Yeah, he was.
Granted, I'm probably wouldn't change just about anything on what I'm thinking about voting, but I will never file my vote until the season ends.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. You've already filed yours?
I didn't hit submit, but it's already... I don't think I'm going to change
this
anything.
Sounds like a dog. The doctor of South Florida is like, no, it's not official yet.
It's not official yet, guys.
I can always get it back. What do you mean? I make one phone call, get it back.
I mean, yeah, but you're going to stand on that point, but you're not going to change a damn thing anyway on your list.
I might, but I have the option.
There, okay.
So I'm already calling an audible on this rundown. Really
Shocker.
Quick, which awards are already decided for you. MVP is Lucho.
MVP is the
goalkeeper is Berkey.
And manager as well.
Manager is Carnell.
Yeah.
Young player has got to be Almada.
It is Almada, yes.
Yeah,
I have those. Those are all done. And I feel like they're all pretty...
Defender of the year is still up in the air.
I don't have that picked yet. I do not. All right. I don't know where I'm going to go yet.
So MLS defenders out there, if you want to impress Stefano and maybe get an extra vote, you know... And yeah, hit up his DMs. Maybe a good performance this weekend or next weekend. We will
or,
see.
You know, or any type of gifts. We all accept gifts here to the studio. And I'm not alone in that one. On
there's the Miami, Florida, immediately asking for a bribe.
There you go. Speaking of Miami, Florida, there's a new documentary out on Apple TV Plus. It's called Messi Meets America. As I said, it's on Apple TV Plus. The first three episodes dropped this week. You can go stream them now. Additional episodes of the six-part series will be viewable later in the season. Not that there's that much season left. In fact, for Miami, there's only two games left in the season because they were eliminated from the playoffs last week. But I'm looking forward to checking that out. I haven't watched it yet. I am led to believe that Chris Whittingham is actually the star of this documentary.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be about Messi, right? But 5 minutes in, our good friend from MLS Season Pass and our commentator friend, Chris Whittingham, is all over the show. He's being interviewed about all these games, and it's funny because we have this just running bit with him. He's a good friend of mine for years now, where he just can't survive. He can't be comfortable without having a microphone in his face at some point in the day. He needs to have at least one microphone in his face at one point in the day. And he's got that with Messi. But the funniest part about that is that when the documentary comes out, he's watching it and he puts in the chat, hey, guys, I'm in the Messi doc. We're like, you were interviewed for it. Shouldn't you have known that? He's like, I had no idea it was for this project. So they talked to him about Messi for like a solid 40 minutes. No idea it was for the documentary, but he is front and center 5 minutes.
He thought it was just a conversation among friends. He didn't even notice the cameras were there.
He's so used to it, like everywhere he goes.
Because like I said, he doesn't feel normal unless he has a mic in front of his mouth.
His hair was perfect, TV ready, and he probably just thought it was a normal day. What's going on here?
It's Chris Whittingham.
Shout out, Whitty.
It's a mailbag show today. Because Weeby is on vacation. I'm very bullish about our chances of getting through the entire rundown. We'll see how that goes.
We should mention, though, that it's a mailbag show. Weeby's on vacation, yet Weeby submitted some questions.
Yeah, Weeby's in the mailbag.
Most questions.
Weeby, go drink more wine, man. Get off Twitter.
And out of the group chat. Please, spare us all. We will start, in fact, in honor of Weeby's this is a bit that Anders wrote. Anders demanded that we start the show with a bit. So, in honor of Weeby's continued vacation, we start with a bit. The response to Anders putting out the request for mailbag topics this morning on Twitter, Ruben Tisch replied, "Which team is which bagel seasoning? Are the Rapids playing? Is TFC the cinnamon raisin bagel of MLS? If Andrew was here, this would be a 25-minute segment.
Easy.
He's not here. We're moving on."
Yes.
So one of the things I want to talk about, it is award season. As I said, we're going to get into that in depth during next week's shows, and you'll be here for Monday's show, mm-hmm. Tom. But you wrote something I actually enjoyed in the Athletics weekend wrap-up.
That sounds so surprised.
Actually enjoyed.
That didn't come out right. It didn't come out
Freudian right. slip.
you talked about how MLS needs to take a page from the NBA. NBA does first team All-NBA, second team All-NBA, third team All-NBA. And, like, they're all All-NBA players, but there's a differentiation between the three. There are now 29 teams in MLS. There's a lot of good players at basically every position. We still only have one best 11 at this point in our career, in our league's existence. The point you made in your column is that it's time to change that. It's time to expand that.
Absolutely. Look, like it is very difficult every year doing these ballots and trying to figure it out. I think some of the more frustrating parts is that it's really hard to leave off the third best number 10, right? Or the third best center forward, because the way this league is structured, you spend your money in the attack. You don't spend as much at left back, right back. And so sometimes the midfield is all number 10s and the forwards are all center forwards. And maybe there's a center back and then two wing backs occupying the left back and right back.
Look, I'm going to interrupt. There's actually an issue with the voting this year where, like, Christian Espinoza, who's a winger, is only listed on the ballot as a midfielder. So if you want to pick a best 11 in a 4-3-3, you can't have Christian Espinoza in that front three, even though 100% of his minutes have been played in a front three. Continue.
Yeah, and I think that more recognition from more players is always a good thing. Again, particularly with there's 29, soon to be 30 teams in this league. 11 spots to recognize is not enough. And look, we have the All-Star game halfway through the season. It's not the same as best 11 the same way that All-Star isn't like the same as All-Pro in the NFL or All-NBA in the NBA. I think that there's room for several teams. It helps with variance. It helps drive conversations from, you know, both guys, people like us and fans of this league and people within the league. It helps frame these conversations more intelligently, because we say best XI or we say elite or top five. And then all of a sudden, the dirty little secret is you can say top five. Nobody checks you on it, and you have 17 people in your top five.
Yeah, like,
And so I think that'd be really valuable in ways that we can talk about the sport, and we could talk about a whole lot more players. Because think about it. Like, if best XI was more strict and you actually had to pick an XI, Lionel Messi is the only right winger. There are a whole lot of other wingers in this league to talk about. Same thing with center forward and center mid and left back, all going down the list. I think that it would be... It's very important to grow these conversations and make them more intelligent. And again, give recognition to a lot of more quality players, because there's so much quality in this league. For whatever jokes you want to make, the quality is awesome. And again, a part that isn't interesting to people on the outside, I don't think, but this would be very useful for players and agents and GMs negotiating contracts. These are very good metrics to have, and these are very good ways to kind of put yourself within the hierarchy of this league on a season-by-season basis.
It's just... You know, you mentioned the All-Star game, and obviously it's very different, but in the All-Star game, they have that same problem where you had like five number 10s in that midfield where...
Poor Jose Martinez, you defend. Play nine. Can you play 90 minutes?
Play 90 minutes, yeah, exactly. Where in this aspect, this is a way where you don't have to have that, where you can vote a true 11 in, and you could say, okay, he doesn't make my top 11. He can make the second yep. team 11. And like you said, it's just a good way to promote players, to talk about more players, and also for fans to kind of understand where... You know, we might not be talking about somebody who's on the first team, but he still had a very good season. And I think we should recognize guys that had good seasons, but maybe because of all of the issues that we have in the voting process, still being able to recognize them as, hey, this guy had a really good season, and they were one of the top four or ten midfielders, five or ten midfielders this season for in MLS. So I think it's a good way to do it.
It's very important to me to, like, going back, like, historically, and that's another thing the NBA does really, really well, is putting things in historical context. You cannot tell the story of one MLS season with one best 11. And, you know, maybe you could have when there was 18 teams, right, because it's smaller. But, like, and just look at last year. I went back and looked. It was one goalkeeper, obviously, because you had to. Two center backs, a left wing back, Kai Wagner, who is essentially a winger. Then it was three center forwards, three number 10s, and a winger. That's not soccer, man. Like, I want this team to look like a soccer team. But, I do understand the voters that it's, like, again, you'd have to leave. Like, I think even last year I broke some of the rules that I want to do. I want it to look like a real team. But then, like, I forget which year. It was either last year or 2 years ago where it's like.
I had both Hani and Driussi in my best 11 last year, even though they play the same position.
Yeah, but even that you could argue. Be like, all right, theoretically, if we made this, then, like, Hani could play the left wing. Yeah, right. Like, so as long as that. But there was, like, 1 year where I was trying to force myself to get a right back or left back. And it was, like, a year where there wasn't, like, a clear number one. It's like, all right, am I really going to leave off the second number, best number 10 in the league for this? So it's like, I don't want to have to make that choice, and I want to be able to, you know, properly reward as many players as we can. And I don't know. Again, I think people are interested in this, but also we're all the sickos on this show. So what we think is wildly interesting is people are like, how many minutes are they going to talk about second team all MLS? that word that doesn't exist.
If you're listening to the show, you probably are interested in that.
Like last year on this show, we went down, we did our top five all MLS best
behind 11s. The curtain. I don't remember if we addressed it on the show. I wasn't on that show. So if you guys addressed it on the show or not, but the planning and preparation was for three teams. And then Doyle just said, hold up, let me cook, and starts doing the fourth and fifth XI off the top of his head. And, like, Weeby was like, all right, let's go. Like, here we go. Like,
but I mean,
that's a sickness.
Yes. First of all, yes. All right. Like, unquestionably, yes. But also, the history of this league is important to me. And understanding who the relevant players were in any particular year and what made them relevant and how they influenced their team and where they stood in the league hierarchy and what that meant for the 12 months past, but also the 12 months to come. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important story to tell.
I agree.
And I've been fighting to tell it in my column for years and years, and I'm very proud of that. But it sometimes feels like that doesn't reach the way. And I know, like, this has been basically your first year in the thick of it, covering the entire league. You were with the Red Bulls before that. You were, Houston.
ESPN. ESPN. Where I did do a little MLS stuff, but it was not, like, fully diving in like we have this year.
Yeah. And just, like, coming from that perspective, you can see, like, there's a need to please continue. Like,
Without a doubt. I mean, one of the biggest things that we see in the NBA, I mean, we talked about it, the first team, second team, third team NBA, that produces so much content and gets so much conversation around the league. I mean, arguably, we were talking about this just recently, how the NBA, some of the games are starting to get kind of tough to watch unless you have a vested interest. Well, the problem is that when you don't even have games in the league, you still have so much conversation and so much around the league and on digital, they're kings, even up there with the NFL. So why not? Why wouldn't we do that with MLS as well to fully document what each season is? You cannot do that with only 11 players. We've just right now, we could probably mention between the three of us easily 35 players that have had an incredible season or have had good, solid seasons.
I am sweating over the fact between Kai Wagner or Alvaro Barrios as a, like I can only have one. No, I'm serious. Like, have one of them. And, like, that's just one spot off the top of my head
And it's funny because you mentioned that you like to do it and structure your team, your best 11, as a real, like, as an actual team. Like, this is my first time having these votes. I couldn't do that. I didn't do it because I was like, I can't leave out.
Yeah.
I'll start saying my team a little bit, but, like, I personally think I could not leave out Coco Carrasquilla. I think Alvaro Barral is the guy, but then, like, I don't have a right wing back there because I feel like I have to put Coco in, and you have to have Thiago, and you have to have Lucho. So it's like, how do you do it? You can't have a proper team where you're having a six and a wing, a left wing back and a right wing back.
But this drives months of conversation and, like, in you get fans who are hooked now, who have a more in-depth appreciation of the league as a whole and maybe hatred of other teams
yes.
or certain writers out there who didn't vote for their guy. It's the hook that we find in all these other sports.
I was going to say, I just wanted to make one more point on this. I'm picking up what you're putting down, Doyle. You, a hero walking among us. I try to put the league in historical context in my column. I'm so proud of it. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Where is my featured role in the Messi documentary? That's what this is really all about.
Yeah, Whittingham's getting all the glory.
Stuff it, man. I think you know where we stand on MLS Best 11. We want it expanded. We will maybe Tom will write more about that every week in The Athletic. I really did appreciate your
best
column.
11 every week.
Yeah. Honestly, that's an old Weeby bit for his columns back when he was still a writer.
That's going to be a new segment. That's going to be a new segment on Extra Time now. Oh, God.
All right, let's move on. The most of the responses to Anders' prompt for mailbag questions were about playoffs and contenders. So I'm going to read a few of them. Nick, who's at @_TNT_17, give us a preview of Doyle's MLS Cup contender tier list that people need to know. Jimmy King, who is at @JimmyKing35, said, okay, so who's the top contender to win Cup? Seems like it's anyone's to win and everyone's to lose right now. And at @SOB_Evan says, now that we've seen the 2-7 East round robin, who comes out of it in the playoffs? I'm leaning Philly or Columbus due to playoff experience, but maybe it's just bias. I will start by saying that the more I've looked at the numbers and gone back and looked at tape and thought about it, the more certain I am that I have a two-team tier at the top of my list, and it's Cincinnati and LAFC.
So you have LAFC in the same tier, on the same level?
I do. Okay. And, you know, I actually listened back to our discussion about this on Monday's show, and a lot of this year has been about pointing to LAFC's flaws. It's actually become kind of easy to at times because they don't play through midfield as much. They need Bouanga to cook. The defense, Aaron Long, Giorgio Chiellini, not the guys they used to be. They've had some injuries elsewhere. On their day, I think they can still hit a level that I don't think any other team in MLS can hit. The underlying numbers still love them. They did still get to the CCL final. They did still run Monterrey really, really close in League's Cup. They obviously ran Tigres very close in Campeones Cup. Those are different. Look, I mean, Liga MX is like it's like a boogeyman thing now. It's a hurdle for LAFC to take that they haven't taken. They've already taken the hurdle in MLS. They are the defending double winners. They're not going to have any of that baggage going into the postseason. So, yeah, I think that LAFC are going to be, provided there are no untimely injuries on decision day, I think LAFC are going to be on that tier with Cincinnati going into the playoffs. And the other thing I'll point out here is they're getting 2 weeks of rest, and no team in the league needs rest more than LAFC need rest right now.
I think that they're – yeah, you're right about that because they've played more games than anybody else by a large margin.
And I think in the history of the league.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
It's at 55 or something by the end
of
the year.
It felt like at every mile marker in the season, it was like, this is the most games an MLS team has ever played by July 1st. And like,
traveled an absurd amount of miles. Yeah.
Now, I'll argue your point with this. I still think that – they are way too dependent on Bouanga. Mm-hmm. And I think that they aren't playing the style of soccer that you typically see in the playoffs win, right? A solid defending, playing through the midfield, being able to control a game through the midfield. They don't do that. It's a lot of Bouanga, you know, using his speed on the counterattack, getting opportunities. And yes, if he can do that multiple times a game and score a couple goals, then they're going to be in a good place. But I wouldn't say that they're as much of a lock to be on that top tier to contend for MLS Cup because they're so heavily dependent on that.
So I would push back and say, and again, maybe this is just, you know, legacy for Carlos Vela, but I still think he's got his fastball in a one-game, one-off series. And I still trust him. But I think the more important point is that, yeah, Bouanga is the talisman now.
Yeah.
what Bwanga's doing this season is better than what any attacker they had doing last season when they won MLS Cup. So I understand and probably agree, and as well because that he's – we view him more as more streaky, maybe because he's so explosive in just the way he plays and everything he does, rather than like, I don't know, just insert any 20-goal scorer in the league or Tati Castellanos when NYCFC won MLS Cup in 2021. But like, I still think that he's a higher individual talent and more consistent individual talent than they even had last year as coming back. And like, because the playoffs can be random with small sample sizes, even in a best of three, but obviously in the single game eliminations, like if they get eliminated and he doesn't score, it'll be easy to go look back and be like, well, that's what happened. You couldn't rely on him. But it's like, I don't know. I don't think that's as much of an issue for them this year as say just the randomness of one game sample sizes in the playoffs.
Right now they are second in the Western Conference. If they win, there's not really a chance for Salt Lake City to catch them. So right now they're second in the Western Conference. If they win their final game, they will be in that 2-7 matchup. The teams likeliest to be in that 2-7 matchup are Portland, San Jose, or Dallas. Do we fear any of those teams? Do we think any of those teams has a better chance of upsetting LAFC than the others?
I don't think any of them really, but maybe Dallas, because I think that they can...
As a match, pitch control?
Yeah, and they can, like they've played a lot of boring games this season, yeah. And I think that, again...
They don't lose.
Yeah, it's more, again, like, maybe they don't win, but again, in a one-game sample size, ball go in.
Well, I mean, it's a three-game... Remember, it's three games
Yeah. But so, but even then, so, it obviously gives more than a one-game sample size, but also, get to penalties. It's 90 minutes, there's no extra time in those early games there, so... There's even more, I guess, incentive for Dallas to just, hey, like, let's be frustrating as hell and let you try to beat us. And if we can hold on, maybe get a set piece, transition moment with Jesus Ferreira, with, like, let an individual moment. And then, hey, if not, if we keep a clean sheet, we'll try our luck in penalties.
Dallas, by the way, one of the teams playing this weekend, they host Colorado. That's a makeup game from one that was just rained out, or lightninged out, I guess, a couple of weeks ago.
And they need results. They need results to be able to make it.
I can't think about that canceled game without thinking of the poor man who got hit with the O in Toyota Stadium.
God, yeah.
I was getting videos from people at the club, and oh my God, it looked awful out there. Yeah. It was sideways, and it was like, I don't think we're going to play tonight, if I had to guess.
We saw that, actually. There was like, chairs and bench to
crazy.
Bench flew across the pitch, and it was
just another Wednesday night in Texas.
Yeah, Frisco, baby.
I was asking, I was like, why was anybody still there? Because like, they're like, dude, it went from raining to like apocalyptic immediately.
Still nothing better to do in Frisco, Texas, though. That's why they were.
Could have went to the Hall of Fame if it's still open on game days. I don't know if
from a form standpoint, I would say that maybe Portland can
give up too many goals, and, man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You're
I think
right.
Kenny Bwanga would absolutely cook them.
Yeah, but LAFC could also give up a few. I'll agree with you in saying that Dallas is probably the team that can kind of shut down in the back and make it tough for LAFC.
Portland
but
would be more fun, I would say.
Yes, it would be a lot more fun if they played Portland, for sure. But like I said, Dallas still needs the results to even make the playoffs, right?
Dallas,
so it's like they need to win those two games. They have some comfortable, on paper, comfortable games in Colorado and Galaxy to finish the season.
Yeah, they go to LA to finish the season.
But, you know, they still got to get those results first.
Yeah. And two draws doesn't necessarily mean they're in. There are other permutations, but basically because they win so few games, like they're not going to have – if they finish on 44 points and Sporting KC finish on 44 points and – San Jose win their final game, which is home versus Austin, and Austin looks like a, you know, dead man walking type of team, then Dallas actually finish in 10th place in the Western Conference. So we'll be Sporting Kansas City, jumping up into the
That'd be a disaster. That'd be a disaster of a season.
Yeah.
Like, again, even being this close, like, this team should have been challenging for top four, if not expected to be top four this year. So the fact that they're even here is not great, but, like, if things shake out poorly... Disaster of a season.
By the way, same for, well, Portland actually, because Portland have 11 wins. If they draw and end up on 44 points, excuse me, and they host Houston in that final game, if they draw, end up on 44 points, Kansas City win, put them on 44 points, actually, Portland would be out because KC would have 12 wins. to Portland's 11. So I think Portland's going to have to go to that final
game. Friends listening, did you love Doyle doing the math out loud in his head as we went through it? That was probably a riveting part of the podcast. Everybody snapping, like, come back. We're back.
Yeah, we're back. Exactly. Well, none of these teams are officially over the playoff line and eliminated from the playoffs at the same time. Only DC United get that distinction. Some other responses to the by the way, we didn't even touch on San Jose in that discussion.
Do we really have to?
Yeah.
No, look.
But didn't we last show?
They're just, I mean.
Did we?
Kaywin did message to the fans.
That's right. That's right.
They're just, I mean, the only other team on the Western Conference that has more draws than Dallas is San Jose with one extra draw. Yeah. Just so inconsistent. We know what they have. If Espinosa can cook and get and have some service in the box for Obobese, they're a team that can score. But I don't know what to make of them. I really don't.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Yeah. It feels actually a lot like this Dallas team where they've prioritized pitch control over dynamism, and I think that's hurt the watchability of the product. And it's also, you know, led to a lot of draws. But hey, given where they were last year, just being back in the playoffs, if they get it done at home on decision day against Austin, they are in the playoffs. Like, that is a massive step forward for this team.
Even being alive right now is a step forward because, like, last year it was borderline two-thirds of the season. They were pretty much
done
off.
Yeah.
And I believe
they were better under Alex Covello.
Yeah, but they were, I think they were 0-7 or 0-6-1.
Happy for Lucci for sure to get this team and at least have them here in this spot from where they were last year.
Speaking of teams that have already had massively successful seasons, let's talk Houston Dynamo. At Julio_DA, his response was, can the Dynamo midfield carry them to an MLS Cup, or are they missing too many offensive pieces to make a run at it? I think this is a very good question, and I am too much of a coward to go first.
Corey Baird erasure.
I love that. I love that Corey Baird celebration. Look, with this Houston team, I would have said earlier in the season, they don't have enough in attack to make a run. With these guys that they have, they've been able to – they scored 5 goals like 3 or 4 times already in the second half of the season since League's Cup. I just think their midfield is so, so, so good. And it's really giving that freedom to their forwards to go out there and score because you have Coco and Hector Herrera and Archer behind them really being able to control games. And it's showing not only in midfield, but it's showing out in their attack as well. Corey Barrett looks like a 25-goal scorer. Like, I mean, it's been pretty insane to see.
Looking at this since League's Cup, they did a 5-0 over Portland. That was obviously Gio Savarese's last game. 3-1 against RSL at home in the Open Cup semifinal. So that's a lot of goals. 3-1 at RSL back in league play. 2-0 at home against Columbus. That's a really good win. Then shutout at the Galaxy, 1-1 home against St. Louis in a game they controlled. This is where I think they missed a real high-end goal scorer in that one. 4-1 at home against Vancouver. That was a very good performance. 2-1 loss at Kansas City. 2-1 win at Miami in Open Cup. Then a little bit of a hangover after that. 0-0, 1-1.
That Miami game could have been 6-0.
Oh, yeah. 0-0, 1-1 in the two games after that. And then finally 5-1. This past weekend, Colorado at home. A lot of good wins in there. Not a lot of great road wins against the top teams. Not a lot of high scoring games on the road against the top teams in their town.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. But I think we could go through every team, particularly in the West, with just how consistent a lot of teams have been. For me, a basic thing that I really like, and I think that this is where their season jumped a level, is Nelson Quiñones went from interesting, he'd have some good moments, wasn't consistent enough, whatever. I was talking to people at the club in preseason, how's he gonna? And they're like, you're gonna think that I'm lying or overblowing. I promise you, there are some days in training, and they played either the US U23s or the US national team in the January camp in a scrimmage. He's like, Nelson Quiñones was the best player on the pitch. And I don't say that lightly. And then it's 3 days later, he was the worst player in training. He's like, you can see the moments, the talent with this kid. He's like, if we can just get him to be more consistent, we got a player on our hands. And first half of the season, I was like, yeah, no, he was just lying to me. And he was just overblowing this pretty good. But over the last 2 months, he's been a real difference maker. Amin Bassi, very, very good. And the basic point that I really like and what's really elevated this team, again, first and foremost, that midfield trio that controls the games and how much control it gives Coco Kersky and Hector Herrera to play more aggressive and get further up the field. The little thing is the balance that Quiñones and Bassi have. One is always going vertical and one's coming in and playmaking. And then Griffin Dorsey coming around on fullback. Like, their balance is so well. These players fit together so well. So, sure, on paper, in theory, they don't have the same attacking trio as just about any of these other top teams in the West. But, like, it all makes a lot of sense, and they play above the sum of their parts.
Well, it all does come from that central midfield, their ability to get on the ball and conduct games. And if you if you're going to beat the Houston Dynamo, you have to do something to take them out of their rhythm. And we've seen that repeatedly this year, teams that are able to do that. I don't want to say have their way with the Dynamo, but like, you know, those tend to be the teams that figure out a way to win. I'm going to struggle to put Houston in the second tier, which is maybe underselling it because they did just win a trophy. They did beat a lot of good teams on the way to winning a trophy. The West is sort of their, you know, kind of like ripe for the taking. But, you know, Cincy and LAFC in that first tier.
Can I guess your second tier then? I would have guessed Houston, so I would have gotten it right.
Yeah, go ahead and guess the second tier.
I think you'd have Philly, Columbus, and Seattle. And then I would have said Houston, but I would have been wrong. Is it three or is it more?
I'm going to think really hard about St. Louis.
And Orlando, probably on the cusp.
Orlando's going to be in there.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned all, just real quick about Houston again. You mentioned all the results, and I think the biggest thing, only one loss since League's Cup in MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, we could say all we want, and have a couple of results in there that maybe aren't as, you know, aren't as spectacular, but I think what that does for a team is that they haven't experienced nothing but one loss in the league. That gives you all the confidence going in. I mean, I feel like it is a team that I don't think anyone wants to face. Maybe not. We wouldn't say that about that they're the team that really nobody wants to face in the Western Conference because you have Seattle and you have LAFC there. But the Dynamo have to be up there, I think.
As a Miami Heat fan, I think I've made this point before. The Seattle Sounders remind me so much of last year's Miami Heat, where everybody's writing them off for a pretty crappy regular season, and Seattle's.
But Seattle can play with joy sometimes, man. Don't put the heat on them. My God.
Whoa!
But
they don't play with joy. You, a Knicks fan, is saying that?
We play with joy.
Yeah, so much joy. Being eliminated in the second round, a lot of joy. Swinging.
But there's a lot of people throwing dirt on the Sounders.
Yeah.
And it's just like, they're the Sounders, man. They know how to win this time of year.
And with everything we've said about them all year long and then not being the same Sounders team, they're sitting in third place in the West.
Yeah.
And they are probably one of the top defenses in the league still.
By the underlying numbers, they are the best defense in the league.
So what's a recipe for championships? Defense wins championships. You can say that about in every sport. I would not be shocked one bit to see Seattle make a run.
Yeah, that's why they're probably going to be a second-tier team for me. Anders didn't actually work any Seattle messages into the mailbag. I'm surprised about that, but we do have one from Callan Kehoe at Kehoe21 on Twitter wants to know what should RSL's realistic target finish be with their two games left? Technically, they could finish as high as second or third, but playing two away games and counting on other teams to lose seems like a tough ask. I will add that Chicho Arango came off injured in their game this weekend. He was crying on the bench afterwards. Pablo Mastroeni gave an update, didn't give a time frame, but said anytime it's a hamstring injury, it's not good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what's more important to me than seeding. Like, it is what it is. Like, again, we could talk about the permutations. I don't think that's very interesting to be like, well, they could finish on 48, and then what if this happens? And, like, none of that matters if Chicho Arango isn't fit, honestly. Like, I think that they have a lot. This isn't obviously a one-man team, but they've already lost Pablo Ruiz, who was incredibly important for them, and we saw how important it was in the immediate aftermath when he wasn't there. I don't think that they can withstand Chicho Arango and Pablo Ruiz both being out. Like, they have talent and attack still, but, again, I don't really care if they finish fourth or sixth if Chicho's out.
Yeah, as pointed out, they do have two away games left. They're at the Galaxy and at Colorado, so they're not facing murderer's row here. But this is not, and this is a team that's actually been pretty good on the road all season long, but they're still trying to, and we just did the match preview for it on Season Pass. And one of the things that we kind of touched on, like, they're trying to rebuild the plane while flying it, and they had maybe hit on something over the past couple of games going to more of a 4-4-1-1 or 4-2-3-1 with Savarino underneath as a second forward or even a playmaker. And that allowed them to have a level of solidity and comfort on the ball in midfield that they had lacked since Pablo Ruiz was injured in League's Cup against LAFC. But I'm not going to say it's completely back to the drawing board with Chicho out, but it's not good, man.
It feels like it is. It feels like it's back to the drawing board. He's just too important. I'm a big Chicho guy. I always have been. LAFC doesn't win MLS Cup without Chicho last year. And he comes back into this team. When he first shows up at RSL, they are flying, absolutely flying. And he's really at the leading that. And without him there, like I said, I feel like there's almost nothing to talk about. It's not going to be the same team. And like you mentioned, without Ruiz already, they've struggled so much. But they still have Chicho there to be able to save them and get some results that they were able to get. It doesn't help in this last game where Justin Glad gets sent off 3 minutes in, and now he won't be
still almost
part of this
won anyway,
game.
Or almost got a almost result got a, anyway.
Yeah, almost came back in that game. But I think without Chicho, RSL is in trouble. And you know, hopefully, for everyone's sake, I hope he's able to come back for the playoffs and we are able to see him in action for this RSL team. But if they don't have him, I can't put them really high.
You know what this means for the playoffs, though. This means that everybody in the world, all right, RSL is going to lose their next two games to Colorado and the Galaxy. They'll drop down to the 8-9 game. everybody in the world will pick them to lose that. They'll win that one 2-0 somehow, and then they'll go into St. Louis in that first game, and they'll get outshot 26-1, and Damir Krylak will score a 25-yard karate kick goal on the only final third entry of the game that RSL have, and they will win that first game. Like, this is MLS heritage.
Oh yes,
again,
this is Real Salt Lake heritage. Yes. They, like, Spin Zone, what is stronger, having a $6 million awesome DP forward or to genuinely say nobody believes in us? Who could say?
Right.
Who says no, right? I will give you a Pablo Mascherini quote from 2017. Stats will lose to the human spirit every day. He will be replaying that. I'd want to record every word he says and use it as a motivational book if this scenario happens. Because again, if there's one team in this league to believe that without Arango, without Ruiz, hypothetically they lose to two teams that have already been eliminated from the playoffs, yep, going into the playoffs. If one team would be unfazed by that, it's a Pablo Mascherini Real Salt Lake team.
Yeah. It's an inexplicable league at times, and RSL have consistently been the most inexplicable team in this league over the past 5 years.
How many times did we sit? It was like last year and 2 years. I feel like anytime we talked about Real Salt Lake, it's like, yeah, I keep on getting wrong about them. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're doing it. And until that if they start losing, I'm going to assume they're going to win, and I don't really know how.
Yep. That is our line on RSL when there's nothing else left to say. And
last year in particular.
Last year in particular. Honestly, this year too. We'll see how
they have a lot more quality, I think, this year.
They do, but it's still tough to figure all of it out or any of it out, really.
Stats will lose to the human spirit every day, Doyle.
Pablo gave us the key 6 years ago. It's off-season already for a number of MLS teams. We talked a lot about that on Monday, particularly with DC United as the focus, because Wayne Rooney, who has already officially been named Birmingham City manager.
Yeah.
So he knew he was going. Yeah. Wayne Rooney leaving DC United. We got a mailbag question from Chris Lyle. I am Chris Lyle, Lyle on Twitter. Can we talk about what actually needs to change behind the scenes for DC to ever be relevant again? I'm tired of the Casper master level disaster class. Oof. But unfortunately, I don't think simply removing that issue will magically fix things. Still 100% worth a shot, though. Tom has some reporting on this, but so before we dive into that, let me just give some context. Jeff Birding was the guy sort of calling the shots in Cincinnati for the first couple of years, built that team that won trophies in 3 straight seasons. That trophy was the Wooden Spoon. Jeff Birding is still there, right? He is still part of that ownership group. He's still part of that front office. He does not have anything to do with player personnel decisions, on-field stuff at all. That's Chris Albright's mandate now. And you can see what has happened to Cincinnati. So I don't, like, we don't call for people's jobs on this show. I think it's fair to criticize Dave Casper, but like to say that there's no way of fixing DC without Dave Casper going to the unemployment line, I don't buy that.
Yeah. So I think the Cincy example is a great one, is that I shredded DC on Monday because of how many short-term fixes and the lack of plan and all these head coach searches and different play styles, and that revolved into, I think they signed 23 players under Wayne Rooney in the last year without a GM and letting Wayne Rooney do these, and again, like, because he was de facto head of the, like, I guess Dave Kassler was, but it was Wayne Rooney had the keys for that. And they knew this was going to be a short-term hire, and they let Wayne Rooney sign 23 players and three DPs. I don't understand, like, and this is why they continued. They haven't made the playoffs in 4 years, and they haven't advanced in the playoffs since 2015. Again, I stand by all of that. What I will say is, since Monday's show, myself and Pablo Mara did some reporting, DC United are closing in on a GM hire. That is very positive. What's more positive are the two finalists that we know of. I don't know if it's only those two, but I think these are the two favorites. Columbus Crew assistant GM Issa Tall and Nashville SC assistant GM Ali Mackay. They requested to interview Orlando City's Ricardo Moreira and were once again denied, which they tried to do earlier this year as well. That means they're looking in the right places. This is the first step that needs to happen. This is the most important step of DC United's offseason. But what I know about Issa Tall and Ali Mackay, I've heard a lot of great things. And just look at what Nashville has done. Mackay's been there since day one with Mike Jacobs for the MLS, for their MLS expansion. They've been one of the most successful MLS expansion teams in modern history.
Most consistent.
Yeah.
Other than the Sounders.
Yeah. Yeah. They made the playoffs every year. They've been, you know, they signed an MVP. They've signed a three-time Defender of the Year. They've been incredible. And Ali Mackay,
they've been really good, particularly at making moves from within the league. If
sure.
you look at that Nashville roster, they have done a great job of identifying veterans who still have something left and young players, Jacob Schaffelberg, for example,
yeah.
who could flourish.
Sure. And again, they signed the MVP from abroad, too. So, again, I know that they've had more success domestically, but that's not just a side note. And then with Issa Tall, he was with Tim Bezbatchenko in Toronto, and then he left to join FIFA headquarters. He came to Columbus under Bezbatchenko again, and I've spoken to a few people because I don't know a ton about him, and it's, particularly when he left MLS for a little while. A couple people went out of the way after I reported it to be like, dude, Issa's brilliant. Like, he's really smart. Like, that's a really good, like, potential hire if they end up hiring him. And again, like, I give the benefit of the doubt to the Tim Bezbatchenko tree. Just look at how what's happened to Toronto since he's left. What's happened to Columbus since he got there? They won MLS Cup in 2020. I think that was the first full year Issa Tall was there. He was part of that team. You know, again, whether he helped build a ton of it or not, just because of the timing, I think is a little bit besides the point. It is very smart where DC are looking right now. And this is the most important hire. And I think either way that they go here, I would give them the absolute benefit of the doubt as long as the previous regime gets out of the way and lets one of these two guys cook. Because if they don't, if I was them or if I was their agents, I would say, get assurances that you have final say and you only. Because if not, why would you leave Columbus where you're working with Tim Bezbatchenko and a really great team? Why would you leave Nashville where you're working with Mike Jacobs and a really great team? So if you don't have final say, what's the point?
You right? need that chief soccer officer yeah. title.
Yeah, and just one more point here before, I know I've been talking for way too long. One more point is the timeline. What we're told is we're expecting a decision to be made within the next 10 days. Again, whether a contract is signed and announced, I'm not 100% sure, but everything we've been told is this is going to happen immediately. And again, the timeline and the candidates, this is the best possible outcome so far for DC United.
Whoever does come in, if that's the path that they take, how easy can they rebuild this roster to get it to where they want? Obviously, it's a roster that has, you know, that is flawed for sure.
Yeah, it's going to take a little creativity. So they have an open DP spot, which, again, is most important, and I don't want that to just be a hangnail part of this because that is such a high-leverage spot. They signed 23 players over the last year. They signed several key free agents this winter. Those are all multi-year deals. And, look, it's not impossible to get out of them. And again, that's not even to suggest that nobody has any value or nobody is wanted at any other club, but it's not as easy as seven contract options, decline them all, and, like, let's go. So what they need to do, really, is – at least one new fullback, I would say two. Definitely one new anchor of a center back. And then I think with that DP spot, you get a chance creator. Because I know that the numbers, I didn't know how bleak it was for Gabriel Pirani in his chance creation. But I think he's a very useful player. It's just don't play him as a number 10.
Yeah, yes. I'm not sure I'm going to say he's a very useful player.
It's a U22 initiative if they pick up the purchase.
There's some potential there. I'm not sure he's worth that U22 slot.
I do.
You know, Tom thinks he is. Either way, I would be looking for a DP number 10. And I don't think Pirani's
No. Yeah.
I don't think he's it. I don't think he's a guy that you can use to build the attack. But like to that point though, DP number 10, it is like the simplest solution, right? Is like you find this iteration, this generation's iteration of Lucho Acosta, and you have Benteke and Cudipietro up front, and you have a bunch of functional central midfielders, Kleek, Durkin, Knaus behind them, and like, okay, you could play a 3-5-2, or maybe you could play a diamond if you want to be a little bit more narrow and vertical, but like, it's not far away, I don't think. Another team that's not far away, another team that's not necessarily eliminated from the playoffs, the Chicago Fire. Chris Lyle sent us another question. By what metrics do the Fire justify possibly bringing back their current front office? From a neutral's point of view, that seems like the worst possible decision given how things have gone. I will say from my point of view, 4 years is a good long time. They have been wildly successful at a couple of things, mostly selling players on for big fees in Europe. They have done a really good job of opening that academy pipeline. I think in terms of homegrown minutes this year for players on their first contract, so I'm not talking like Jordan Morris, Justin Glad, but guys who are like truly young, I think the Fire actually lead the league. And in Chris Brady, who I had number one on my 2,222 list, and Brian Gutierrez, who now has the profile of a national team guy. They did a fantastic job with that. They have not done a fantastic job of building a winning soccer team, and they have gotten most of their DP signings something close to catastrophically wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, a lot of the same themes that I find myself paying attention to or bringing up is the way that talent fits with each other. It's not particularly in MLS, more so than anywhere else, because like again, look at Chelsea. You can sign 700 players if you want to in England. You can keep signing number 10s until you get one right. Eventually you will. In MLS, you can't miss. Everything has to be every decision is informed by another decision. Jairo Torres and Jerdan Shaqiri do not make sense as two of your three DPs together. Brian Gutierrez, your most promising field young player, doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, he could play. Like, I think that him and Shaqiri has been playing well. And again, I know I'm a Shaqiri homer a little bit. He's not been good enough for the fee, what they're paying, what they're expecting for. And then you just kind of go down the line that, like, that was part of the issue. That, like, it's not just failing on individual signings or not hitting individual signings. It has been plenty of that as well. But more of an indictment for me is the lack of a coherent plan for these high leverage pieces to fit with each other.
I feel like it's also, ownership has gotten criticism. Oh, they criticize the Fire. Oh, they don't want to do this, or they don't want to spend.
They're spending. Oh, they're just spending. And they have been for years.
They just don't spend in the right way, and they're not getting the most for their investment. They're selling on, and they're doing all those things correctly. But yeah, I mean, if you sit down and you really have watched the Chicago Fire team, it's uninspiring.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I did a couple of their games. Sorry, Chicago fans, but it's been rough. It's been rough to watch to their games. The team doesn't gel together. They're not getting anything from their DPs, and it's just that's not the winning formula.
A lot better lately, again, because yes. I want to be sure.
But a lot better. They had a great game against Miami, and then they laid an egg against Charlotte. So
that was tough. But they did go on the road to beat the Red Bulls, and I thought, all right, their season's pretty much over here. They were on a really bad run of form, and that was a good performance. Again, the Red Bulls aren't the best team in the league, but again, like they showed up in that game, and then a big game against Miami, they showed up again, particularly Shaqiri, which was extremely, extremely impressive for them to like.
Rolling my eyes at you,
Tom. He was awesome that game.
He was awesome in front of 60,000 people. He decided to get motivated for that game.
But then, like, the game afterwards, the game this past week, and the 2-0 loss to Charlotte, that's what playoff teams are made of. Yeah. You take care of business in a game like that. Shaqiri didn't show up for that one. Yeah. I made a clip from that game. Charlotte were able to build right up the gut a million times because Shaqiri doesn't defend and Gaston Jimenez doesn't really defend either. They did against Miami.
Yeah.
But the game afterwards, that mattered just as much, and they didn't do it. Andrew from Portugal.
And wow.
Should the Fire sign Georgi Mihailovic? What other moves looking at DP slots should accompany that list? What coach, like, he asked, of course, it's Weeby. He had a list of questions.
Of course.
The first one is the interesting one. Georgi Mihailovic was sold to AZ Alkmaar last summer, summer of 2020.
From Montreal.
Montreal.
The money. Yeah.
Was it before 2022 or was it?
It was after last season.
It was after last season. It was after last season.
10 months ago.
For a good chunk of money.
$6 million.
He landed there, and he was very good off the jump, but then there were some injuries. There was a coaching change. He has not been able to break back into that regular rotation there. There are now whispers that he wants to return to Chicago for personal reasons. Haven't been able to verify that. But if Georgie's out there, this is a proven high-level chance creator in MLS.
Yeah. But, like, would this be the most Chicago Fire move of all time? They had him on a homegrown contract, traded him, and then now signing him back as a DP for what? There's no way Azed is going to let him go for less than $6 million. So you just spend a whole lot of money on a player that you already had in your team as a homegrown. And, oh, by the way, he doesn't fit very well with, again, if you can move out Shaqiri Hira-Torres if you want, but even Gutierrez. Like, this, they have a lot of investments in this area of the field, and it would just be the icing on the cake to go back and get a player that was in your academy that you sold for, you know, $1 million in allocation money a year and a half before he was sold for $6 million in real money. And then you spend $8 to $10 million in real money to get him back, which would just be a microcosm of the last half decade.
The counterpoint to that is, like, you get a 25-year-old number 10 proven in MLS in his prime, and, oh, yeah, he's a local kid with local roots and local hero status with the Fire Hardcores.
Yeah, it'd be an upgrade, and it'd be, you know, it'd be a story to get behind. But when you kind of lay it out the way you just did, Tom, it's like, yeah, is that really the move you want to make in that?
What you're saying, and like, okay, you look at the, like, you sold him for 20 cents on the dollar, and now you're paying a premium for him, but you're still getting a guy who you can build around. And, like, isn't that the ultimate goal for the Chicago Fires? Like, actually get a piece who plays two-way soccer and cares enough to play two-way soccer and will be there for a while?
And don't let one bad decision lead to another bad decision.
Right.
You're right. Like you said, if this is the answer.
That's for Tom after his seventh Miller Lite.
Tuesday night, man.
Andrew from Portugal also asks, who's the number one overall super draft pick in December? It's very, very early. I haven't done a canvas of any of the GMs or scouts or anything, but the name that jumps out to me is Jacob Murrell. He's a 6'3" center forward for Georgetown. Last I checked, he had 8 goals in 9 games, and obviously the Big East is the best conference in the entire world, so that matters a lot. He was very good as a freshman last year. As a senior in high school, he was Parade All-America National Player of the Year. It seems like he is the consensus number one choice. Go ahead.
No, so I will say I defer all of this to Travis Clark, as again, I'm sure that you'd say similar as well. But what I think you should have done is said a couple fake names and deadpanned it and looked at me and Steph to see if one of us would have been like, oh, good player. He's pretty technical, and just try to see if you could catch us, like, trying to fake it or something.
I would have just nodded and
said, No, I would have been like, yeah, dude, I don't know. Like, but just to see if one of us would have bowled it.
I kind
of
hate myself for not having it.
I love that it genuinely bothered Doyle that he doesn't have it.
Or it's like in the NCAA tournament when, you know, NBA writers or people who haven't been watching basketball is just like, oh, Mount St. Mary, senior guard play, buddy. Like, yeah.
I want to know, though, because it was Andrew from Portugal who asked this question, of course. I want to know if he has a full list and he wanted to try to catch us off guard with that. I think this is a bomb dropped in here by Andrew Wiebe.
If Wiebe comes in with a list of, like, his top 10 super draft prospects, I will be shocked. I will be at, like, Goss could do that. Yes. Goss might be Dubai actually watching college soccer right now. Yeah. That's David's MO, but not Andrew, I don't think. He's arguing with Austin fans on Twitter.
yes, that's more his MO.
Sean Hardgrove, S Hardgrove on Twitter. Given ownership, academy, fan base, etc., what's the most intriguing coaching vacancy?
Ooh. So I think for me, it's...
Well, let's list the ones that are officially open, right?
Yeah,
Portland, Miles Joseph is still interim. Yeah. Frank Klopas is still interim in Chicago. There is no coach in D.C. Is Troy Lesane still interim?
He's never been interim, but his contract's up at the end of the season. And nothing's official. I still think this technically counts because he's not under contract through the season,
right?
But I reported last week that he seems to be in pole position to return.
Okay. Colorado, Chris Little is still interim.
Correct.
Greg Vanney is still the manager with the Galaxy. I think it's going to stay that way. Clint Pea is still interim with New England.
Yep.
There are some good jobs open, man.
Minnesota.
Minnesota, that's right. There is an open job heading into next season.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I've been talking too much.
I would have said Portland first. Yeah, please. I would have said Portland. I think because of the fan base, because of the team that they have, because of the flexibility that they've shown to build a team. But I think it's Minnesota just because of the talent that they have right now. And again, it could change if a manager comes in and wants to do other things, but if you're starting with Reynoso as your main piece, you're already a step ahead of
Reynoso
most of the
and like Pookie still got something left in the tank. They had the kid that they drafted last year who's been tearing it up in USL, so they have number nine depth. I know Bongi is hit and miss and a lot of miss down the stretch here. I love Bongi as a third attacking piece. You know, they need to upgrade both fullbacks probably. They need to add a younger center back. I think Michael Boxall is still a good player, but you don't want 3,000 minutes from him. Robin Lud coming back. I love Robin Lud.
Yeah.
It sucks that he got hurt.
Yeah.
Because like he would have been, I think he would have solved a lot of their, I think Adrian Heath would still be the coach right now if Robin Lud didn't get hurt.
Yeah, it's fair. A very fair point. Yeah. The Revs are interesting because they're a very good team. They have an MVP caliber number 10, as Minnesota do. They have an academy that's starting to really churn out talent. So I just mentioned Jacob Merle, the kid at Georgetown. I watched one of their games the other day. Noel Buck's older brother is a central midfielder for that. He's a Revolution Academy kid. He's really good too. Like he's not getting called up by England good, but he's a future MLS guy. The Revs are super interesting. To me, it does come back to DC.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Interesting.
Remember, I'm an old Metro Stars fan. So my brain is always going to be poisoned by what DC did to us from 96 to 99. And they were so far and away the best team in MLS at the start. And Marco Echeverri, like, if there was a Jerry West thing where we had to pick one player as the logo for MLS, to me it would still be Echeverri with that mullet, the ball on his left foot.
Yeah. Oh my God. Right? Yeah.
And like,
the best. That's the answer.
The iconic kit, the like everything about it clicked, and they were such a good bad guy. Everybody hated DC because we admired them. And so to me, as the old head here, it'd be like getting to be, you know, do you want to manage the Yankees? I freaking hate the Yankees, but yeah, of course you want to manage the Yankees. You know, like that's what it is to me.
But is this the fine? They're the
it's more like the Cowboys, though, right?
It's more like the Cowboys.
But it's like, oh, actually, you America's haven't been that team. Relevant in 25 years. Sorry.
Right. And I just feel like you can't say that with the roster that they have, with
that
the team
too.
That
it's
they
too
have,
too much
with work. The issues that they have to be able to fix this roster. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I think I'm higher on this roster than you guys are, partially because part of this is the academy. Like Sean specifically mentioned academy in the question. And like, of all these groups, I would rather have that hotbed of talent to draw from for it. Because, like, Ted Kudipietro is a solution. Chris Durkin, to a lesser extent, but I think is a solution. Certainly, Mattia Akinboni.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, okay, 17 years old, you're probably not going to want to ask more than 1,200 minutes out of him at the first division. But, like, that 17-year-old center back, very few teams are going to have that pipeline of talent coming through. So, I am on the record as saying DC looks like a great job to me. And just like, because I am as freaking old as I am, I hope they get it right. And I hope neutrals can go back to hating DC United like I did once in the back in the day, once upon a time.
It seems like the league is better when DC United can be a team one of the top teams.
Yeah, if DC and the Galaxy can both be eminently hateable at the same time, like, wouldn't that be a perfect world? Timothy Hotze at Sing Electric, Sing _ Electric on Twitter. Tons of front office openings this year. Which teams are the most and least likely to nail their next hire? We're not even going to answer that one, but like if you listen to this show and the last one, you probably can tell where.
Again, but we just said a lot of nice things. DC, just based on what we know, they're doing the right things.
So. Yeah. Top Bin 90 says sources Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has expressed interest in coaching Charlotte FC.
Okay, and then Charlotte FC president Joe Lebue quote tweeted that tweet. And said, to be very clear, Ole visited our facility along with many other MLS facilities last week. It's common and best practice to host people from across the globe, and we'll continue to do so. We're proud of what we built. End of story.
Christian Latanzio, still officially the manager.
Yes.
Charlotte have two games left. They have control of their own destiny. I think it's notable that Latanzio has finally started playing Spoderewski kind of underneath a true number nine.
Hallelujah.
Finally.
Working a bit.
Yeah.
I think Charlotte's going to make the playoffs, actually.
And it worked out for them that both of those games are against Miami. Yeah. And
a Miami that's already eliminated.
A month ago, that looked like, oh, my God, they have no chance. Because, right. Miami were killing people, and then a couple injuries happened, and now they're mathematically eliminated.
I just want Ole in the league so we can hear fans just chanting, Ole's at the wheel. That's all I want to hear.
Anders, why didn't you cut out his mic on that one?
Our good friend Morgan Tenza says the best birthday gift is a new episode of Extra Time. Happy 25th, Morgan. In honor of 25, she says, who is the best player in MLS history to have worn number 25? I'm biased, but I say Ilsenio. She, of course, is a big Union fan. Ilsenio was my first thought as well, but I think you actually have a better answer, Stefano.
Brian Ching of the Houston Dynamo. Yeah. Legend. Yeah. Legendary number 25.
Yeah, legendary number 25. Golden Boot winner with the Dynamo, of course, multiple-time MLS Cup winner with the Dynamo and with San Jose.
Yeah, one with San Jose as well. Didn't he win
Shield
Open Cup as well?
Shield in 2005. I don't know about an Open Cup. I don't think that team ever did much in the Open Cup.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm wrong.
Great player.
Still around the club a lot, too. He's still really...
Threw out the first pitch at an Astros game with Ace Ace last week.
That's pretty fun. That all right. Look at that. You've had that nugget in your head. When can I use it? Bang! Now
boom,
I can use it.
I mean, it just came to me right there.
This whole conversation, again, we talk about number 10s, number 9s, number the iconic numbers. Now we're talking number 25. Obviously, this reminds me of depths of the pandemic and early pandemic. So it's quarantine. Yes. And we're trying to do content on MLSsoccer.com back when I worked there and not The Athletic. And we commissioned a piece that was the best player by number 1 through 99. And there was nobody has ever worn number 73 in this league or whatever the number was. And I remember we were talking about it when it was in the editorial process. And I didn't write this, thankfully. Greg Seltzer did. He did wonderful with it. But we're all man, we're running out of ideas here. We need the sports to come back. There's only so many old games we can watch.
That's too funny. Brian Ching, also a part owner of the best soccer pub in Houston, Texas.
All right. Oh, it's good to know.
Yeah, very good. So.
Give him a little pub. What's their name?
Pitch 25.
Pitch 25.
Watched a lot.
Oh, that's why you knew the name. That's why you knew the number.
All right.
Also, his jersey's just hanging.
The 22 under 22 list came out today. Could catch that on MLSsoccer.com. Of course, the three of us did a live reaction show. You can watch that on YouTube. You can also go there to see the whole list.
MLS Season Pass.
Yeah. MLS Season Pass. Thank you. Alan Velasco, the Argentinian attacker for FC Dallas, was number one. I think it's interesting that he has evolved from an inverted winger in a 4-3-3 to more of a number 10 in a 4-2-3-1 down the stretch here. I think it's a better spot for him. Mm-hmm. Ben Kramaski for Miami was number two. Aiden Morris, number three. I offered a mea culpa on that because I had Aiden Morris too low in mind. What do we want to... Because the list is out. Go see the list. I'm not going to read the whole thing. What do we want to focus on here, guys? Do we have anything in particular?
Let me hit the quick too long didn't read transfer stuff for Velasco. I was told that Villarreal and Porto are two clubs that are very interesting.
You got to explain the pronunciation of Porto because I always thought it was Porto.
It might,
same.
Maybe it's just the Barcelona thing, but I had a good friend of mine that I played college soccer with was in the Benfica Academy. He's a Portuguese-American kid, and that's how he pronounced it, so I just follow him.
Okay. I'm going to follow his lead from now on.
But I don't know if I have 100% confidence in it. Let's see. He is a wonderful person, a good businessman. He is not an SAT score kind of guy. So maybe don't. I'm not going to put my reputation on the line for that. But anyway, Villarreal and Porto are two teams interested in Alan Velasco. There was interest from Ajax, but they've got a lot of bigger problems right now than trying to sign, maybe a starter, maybe a rotation guy, interesting young player. I've also heard Chelsea connected with him, but again, I think they have other problems and about 700 other players in those positions.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, I'd assume that this has got to be at least $10 million in a transfer. And again, I think that's the floor because Dallas acquired him for $7 million, plus I think a little bit of a sell-on. If I'm Dallas, I start at $15 million. And honestly, depending, some of those teams like Porto and Ajax, they weren't realistically going to bid 30 for Thiago Almada. 15 for Alan Velasco or somewhere in there with add-ons and sell-ons, though these clubs can all afford that. And again, if a team like Chelsea or if another really financial superpower comes in, then maybe that bit goes up. But again, Alan Velasco, we haven't heard a ton about his transfer future. So I thought this was useful to kind of dig it up.
I had him third on my top five.
Velasco?
Yeah.
So you went Brady?
I went Brady, Noel Buck, Velasco, Dylan Barrero four.
I had him in my top five as
and
well.
And then Thomas Aviles, who did not make the list.
I mean, yeah, we all
he should have been on the list. I don't mean to let, but like that's it's funny that it's like, oh,
we all have him.
Your
up
number
there.
One was number 18 on the list.
Yeah.
Your number five was not on the list.
I had Buck number one, Velasco number two, Brady number three, Barrera four, and also Aviles number five.
We all had Barrera on our top five. I thought when we didn't talk about this before the show yesterday because we were just doing the official list. And I was like, Dylan Barrera would absolutely be top five. And I thought that, like, all right, proud of that. Maybe it's
what
not.
What was your top five?
Barrera was fifth.
Okay.
Barrera five, Jack McGlynn four, Caleb Wiley three, Noel Buck two, and Alan Velasco one. Alan Velasco one because I think, again, he plays the more premier position out of all of these guys. The ceiling is higher. Caleb Wiley, again, we talk plenty about Noel Buck, so I'll save that. Caleb Wiley, I think, is a pretty sure thing as a top prospect at his position. Again, I was just talking about Velasco plays a more premier position, but again, Caleb Wiley at left back, like Juan David Mosquera, who's have lower on the list. It's another guy I think that's a pretty proven, like, top tier prospect. Again, yeah. Whether they make it fully to their potential or not, I think that those two are unassailable.
The most effective player that I saw in MLS this year on this list was Dylan Barrera before his injury.
Yes,
I think he would have. I think he actually would have walked away with number one on this list if he had stayed healthy for the entire season, because what he was doing so well, he was brought in as a winger, right? He was brought in as Tejan Buchanan replacement. He reminds me of Tejan in a lot.
Same hair, all that. Yeah, right. He was wearing 27. He was wearing Tejan's number last year.
Yeah. But they played a 4-4-2 diamond at the start of the season with Barrero as a second forward. And he was able to do the second forward things you want, which includes dropping in and getting on the ball a little bit and secondary, tertiary playmaker, stretching the line, of course, because he's, you know, got great speed. But he was also drifting out wide and doing winger things, even though they were playing without wingers. And it, like, yeah, he's got the physical gifts, very obviously. He's got technical gifts with the ball. But, like, oh, tactically, he's causing real problems for every single team he's coming up against with his – like, he played his way into the Colombian national team last year. When the Revs get this kid back next year, he's going to be a problem for MLS teams. He'll be too old for 22, under 22 next year. One other name I wanted to point out that we haven't talked a lot about, Diego Luna at RSL. A little cheese wheel of a playmaker coming into – he's Stefano's favorite player because it's got the same body type. Yeah.
100%.
And this is Tom's showing me the Football Reference scouting report page. Go to fbref.com and type Diego Luna in. Diego Luna came into this league as a reputation as a kid who does not play defense and does not get enough of the ball. He has stood that on his head this year for RSL. He has become an excellent two-way player. We also saw it with the US U20s.
Yes. Yeah, that's when I loved him when he was coming from USL to RSL. And then he didn't make an impact right away, and I was probably too critical of him.
Same.
Then I was like, I don't know. Like, you know,
and too critical of Pablo Mascherani, because Pablo Mascherani has gotten this out.
Yes, yes. Very good fit at the U20 World Cup. And he was like a little positionless. It's like, what's his bet? Like, where does he go?
False nine, inverted winger, yeah.
And then the U20 World Cup, he was awesome. And I was like, okay, like that. Like this.
Awesome as a two-way player, like spearheading the press. Like,
yep.
I question whether he's going to have – it's the same as with McGlynn, whether he's going to have the top-end athletic ability to get to the biggest clubs in the world. But in terms of being a committed two-way player, a responsible tactical player defensively who empties the tank for his team, I mean, well done, Diego Luna. Well done, RSL, developing him. He's become so much fun to watch. Not just for how good he is on the ball, but for how all the other stuff he does as well. And I was glad to see him this high. He is not with the U.S. national team. this weekend. Diego Luna was not released. There are three different U.S. national teams to talk about.
The Andrew Wiebe Memorial U.S. national team top of conversation. Three squads.
As a matter of fact, by the time you listen to this, the U.S. U-23 national team will have already played versus Mexico in a game that is not being streamed or broadcast anywhere, apparently. They'll also be playing against Japan next week. The full U.S. national team has two games, the first of which is Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern in East Hartford, the second of which is against Ghana 3 days later. And then there's a Pan Am Games roster. I didn't even realize we were sending a team to the Pan Am Games. And that is a U-23 team as well. So we have a U-23A team, U-23B team. Let's just run through these rosters really quick. I don't know that there's that much to say, but if we please interrupt me if something comes up. Only two goalkeepers for the full national team, Matt Turner, Ethan Horvath. The fullbacks are Serginho Dest, DeJuan Jones. DeJuan Jones is one of two MLS players on the full national team. Joe Scally and Christopher Lund. The center backs are Tim Ream, Chris Richards, Miles Robinson. He's the other MLSer on the full national team. And Cameron Carter Vickers. No Walker Zimmerman, who, of course, has a game with Nashville this weekend. The central midfielders are Weston McKennie, Yunus Musa, Luca De La Torre, Johnny Cardoso, and Leonard Maloney. That's a new name, unless you're an absolute sicko. Maloney is a German-American who came up as a center back in Dortmund's system, plays now as a defensive midfielder for Heidenheim, which is basically the smallest team in the Bundesliga. He has been very good at winning the ball and running a lot this year. He is not much of a passer of the ball. He reminds me a little bit of Tom in that way.
It's the other way around. We kick people in passing.
Gio Reyna is in this camp.
I'm going to stop you. Yeah. And if he plays as a 10, if he plays as a winger, I hope that we see him as a 10.
Yes.
But that's, I think, the most interesting part of this camp.
Okay, so let's talk about it. Gio Reyna and Greg Berhalter, we all know the falling out there. Reyna has not played much for Dortmund over the past few months. Part of that is injury. Part of that is just he is not preferred to the other options. The last time we saw him with the national team was during the Nations League back in May, I want to say.
Yeah, the end of May.
And that was under BJ Callahan. He was playing as a 10 in a 4-2-3-1.
He looked very, very good.
And he looked very, very good. It is interesting to me that he is listed as a midfielder on this roster. That is maybe a tip-off that he is going to play that position. I would point out very delicately, because this really upsets some people in the Twitter sphere, whether it's a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 with Reyna on the right side or the left side, he ends up in the same spot in possession anyway.
Yeah, well, it's that or somewhere in the midfield or as a winger. Like that's I agree with your point, but I think he's much more effective in the center of the pitch. And that also solves the issue of not like, does it have to be Reyna or Weah? Now you can get both of those players in the field. And that makes it even a little bit easier because then that would create a logjam in the mid in central midfield, but Tyler Adams is injured. So I think the best 11 from this camp, it's Yunus Musa and Weston McKennie underneath Gio Reyna, and then a front three of Weah, Balogun, and Pulisic.
Yeah, Balogun and Pepe are the only two center forwards. Go ahead.
Yeah, with Reyna, look, I just think it's important, and we know the discourse behind this and how
What happened? Happen?
Yeah, some little thing happened after the World Cup. No, but look, we're not a team like an Argentina or a Brazil or a Germany or any of these other teams that have loads and loads of depth that can put three 11s on the pitch. Gio Reyna, regardless of what you want to think of what happened in Qatar and you know a lot of people calling him a baby and crying and this and that because he's quitting on the pitch, he is still one of the most talented players, American players, in the world. And whether he's playing with Dortmund and whether he's injured, I think injuries are the biggest thing with him, even bigger than anything else. It's so important to get him in camp, to get him playing that position, because I truly believe that with him on the pitch, this is a better team, and you can build around a player like him when you have other pieces with experience, like a Pulisic, like a Yunus Musa, like a Weah on the wing. And if you get him in the right spot, he is very likely to produce for this team, and you need to get him in. resolve everything that happened, push that all aside, and let him cook and let him be the guy. Because we saw it in Nations League at a very small level, but we need to get him confident and good because it's only going to be positive for this U.S. men's.
You know who I think agrees with that is Greg Berhalter. Because even in the midst of everything that was happening in Qatar 12 months ago, Berhalter still found a way to get him on the field. The kid refusing to train, carrying an injury, parents doing what they're doing. Berhalter still got him on the field. Everyone recognizes Gio Reyna's talent. It's good that he's back. Hopefully everything gets put behind them all. And we get, and hopefully, and that includes the injuries. And, you know, because like that has been the big thing over the past year.
And I do think with Dortmund, as of late, he's been fit and back in the squad. I wouldn't necessarily think it's been because he's not preferred. I think he's just not in shape. He's not really fit. He hasn't been able to train up until about a couple of weeks ago, and he's finally in the squad. So I'm not saying that he's going to get a ton of minutes for Dortmund. They have a very good squad. But I do think that if he has a good showing here, we'll start seeing a little bit more in Dortmund. And look, even last year, when he played for Dortmund,
down the stretch, he was
produced.
Awesome.
Yeah, he was scoring. Yeah. He was assisting. He came in a couple games and got late winners for them as well. So.
And I will say this is good timing for an international break for him and that he's fit for, unlike he wasn't available for September, because I think it's much more likely that he gets more minutes here than what he would if he had two Dortmund League games, and I think that's very good for him.
And let's remember that the games in the next break in November, they actually count. Those are Nations League games. Let me finish out the roster. It's Pulisic, Weah, Brendan Aaronson, Kevin Paredes, and Alex Zendejas on the wings. And Zendejas was a late addition because Malik Tillman had to pull out with an injury. He was very good for PSV his last time.
Yeah, scoring goals, man.
Yeah. Starting for them as well.
Yeah. Then, as I mentioned, Balogun and Pepe up top. It's interesting to me that Paredes is here because I would have thought he would be with the U23s. But here's the thing. Teams don't have to release players for the U23s. They do have to release players for the full national team during official international windows. I'm not sure that's what happened here, but Wolfsburg is not always the most cooperative bunch. Let's go to those U.S. U23s. So this is the U23 camp, not the Pan Am Games camp. Chris Brady, who we've talked about a lot on this show, he is presumably the number one, though Schulte from Columbus Crew, Patrick Schulte, second-year goalkeeper. He is also age-eligible. He's here, and Paul Scamp from Sporting Kansas City. Those are the three goalkeepers. The fullbacks are Brian Reynolds and Nathan Harriel as right-backs, and John Tolkien and Caleb Wiley as left-backs. A lot of depth at left-back. I mean, especially if you throw Paredes in there as potential left-back for the U23s. The center-backs are Tomkinson, Brennan Craig, who was a late addition, hasn't played in MLS this year, but played a lot for the U20s, and Max Dietz.
Never heard of him.
German-American, plays in the second Bundesliga, I believe. The defensive midfielders are Aiden Morris, Tanner Tessman, who struggled with the full national team last month, but has been very good with Venezia, and Obed Vargas. And then central midfielders, Gianluca Busio, Ben Kramaski. Sorry, no Argentina for him.
it's probably a better thing.
And Jack McGlynn. Paxton Aaronson is listed as a midfielder as well. I think he's more of a number 10. Maybe that's where he plays for this group, or maybe it is a 4-3-3. Be interesting to see. The wingers, Esmir Bacak-Tarevic, Revs homegrown. Taylor Booth, who had one very, very good month in the Eredivisie last year and has been pretty good outside of that. He's age-eligible. Brian Gutierrez, who we mentioned. Bernard Kamungo. I love this story.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know his story now. Tanzanian refugee camp, comes to America, lands in North Texas. $90 for a tryout with Dallas's USL club at the time. Gets that contract, and here he is scoring goals against Messi's Inter Miami, and now wearing the red, white, and blue with the U23s. That's fantastic.
And on the 22 under 22 list, he's been doing a great. It's a great story, and he's a good player, and it's fun.
Again,
to
like you said, he had to try out for the second for the USL team, so it's not like he was in the academy from when he was 10, but this is still. This is another way to produce talent and finding it and helping develop it and taking a role like his talent, recognizing it and bringing him into the first team. Like I forget exactly which year he came to the second team, but I think this time, like, he signed his first team contract before last season ended, and like all off season, I was like, "You guys signing? Are you signing a forward?" I was like, we think Kumungo's kind of ready for minutes. I was like, really? Like, he's still Frank O'Hara. Aren't you going to get rid of him? Like we think that we're going to see what happens in preseason. Yeah.
Goal-scoring winger. I'm really looking forward to seeing him on this team. Indiana Vasilev, also in this roster. They have him listed as an attacker. I think what we've seen from St. Louis this year, he's a central midfielder.
I straight up believe he could play any position but center back and center forward.
That's crazy. He's so versatile. He's so, with Miami when he was playing, he was all over the pitch.
Very good play. Versatility is a key component to have on a lot of these rosters. And then the forwards are Duncan McGuire, who is like if Pepe and Balogun were on this roster, like Dunk would be third on the list, right? But because those two guys are with the full national team, he's probably the first choice number nine here. And Johan Gomez, who, of course, his brother has gotten more pub. He's the young left back. He's signed for Sociedad, has been loaned out this year. He is not on any of these rosters, which is a little bit of a surprise to me, but Johan Gomez does get a look. I don't think he'll play much. The Pan Am Games roster, two goalkeepers. Chitura,
even I'm losing juice. This is it's like no, dude, this I is, thought that on. I could have ripped through five or six rosters, and even I'm sitting here, I was like, "Wow, Pan Am Games."
This is where extra time shines bright. Are you kidding me? Chitura Odunzi, who is now with Charlotte FC.
Crown Legacy, technically.
Yeah, fair enough. He and Antonio Carrera are the goalkeepers. Carrera, very high upside kid for Dallas. Odunzi is... was considered high upside.
Yeah, went to Leicester.
Kind of, yeah, fell off and now is trying to sort of rehab his career a little bit with Crown Legacy. The defenders are Nolan Norris, who's a left back, Nico Carrera, who is Antonio Carrera's older brother. He's a center back. Alex Freeman from Orlando City. Thomas Williams, he's a center back from Orlando City. And Mauricio Cuevas, who's a right back for the LA Galaxy. The midfielders, Ted Cudipietro is listed as a midfielder. I thought he was the one snub from the U23 roster. I thought he should have been with the first choice U23s. Other than Duncan McGuire, he's probably the most productive of any of them in MLS this year. Sergio Origel, who is a Chicago Fire guy, Brooklyn Reigns, Houston Dynamo, Danny Leiva, on loan with the Colorado Rapids from Seattle Sounders. Jackson Hopkins, who is sort of an attacker, sort of a midfielder for Loudon, the D.C. United chain there. Reed Baker Whiting, they have him listed as a midfielder. He has played primarily as a fullback for Seattle this year. Super high upside as a fullback. Jack Paniotu from the New England Revolution. He is more of a string pulling deep line midfielder. Alejandro Alvarado, he's in Portugal. He is from the Galaxy Academy. We saw him. He's a box-to-box guy. With the U20s a couple years ago, and Rodrigo Neri from Atletico Madrid, more of an attacking midfielder. And then the forwards are Tega Ikoba from the Portland Timbers and Vaughn Coville, who I know nothing about, from Hull City. That is the Pan Am Games roster. Pan Am Games are going to happen over the next 6 weeks or so, I think. It's essentially the second team U.S. roster for the U23s, which is absurd. I will watch every minute of it.
I know. We talk about Hull. It's crazy that we have all these teams. I'm going to say I won't, but I will.
Yeah. And then our friends in Canada actually have...
We got another roster!
Yeah, one more roster. Our friends in Canada actually have a friendly scheduled for this window. They didn't have any last window, remember, and they're kind of... The Federation is kind of going through it right now, but it's pretty close to a full team. Milan Borjan, Max Crippo, and Dane St. Clair, the goalkeepers, Alfonso Davis, Sam Adekugbe, Richie Larea, Alistair Johnson, and someone named Luke De Folguero.
Folguero? I have no idea.
He's a London-born Canadian, dual national, 17-year-old. Right back. Welcome to Canadian soccer, kid. Kamal Miller, Stephen Vitoria, Derek Cornelius, and Moise Bombito. I think this is Bombito's second official Canada camp. That's a center back core. Matthew Chaunier, Ismail Kone, Jonathan Osorio, Sam Piet, and Harry Payton. I don't know Harry Payton. No?
Nothing.
Please note that Steven Eustachio is out injured. That's the central midfield core. And then Kyle Aaron, Johnny David, Junior Hoylett, Liam Miller, and Charles Auguste Brim are the forwards. To me, this looks like a 4-4-2. I'm not sure how much it matters because they do not have a full national team coach at this point. As I mentioned, Canada Soccer right now, a little bit of a mess with John Herdman stepping out and taking control of Toronto FC.
Do they have a Pan Am team
that we need if to talk about? Did, I didn't find it.
Didn't I think find we're good
it.
On that
we
one.
We might have to push it to Monday's show.
So if you're tuning in for the Canada Pan Am games, we'll lead the show with that on Monday.
We're 90 minutes into this episode, folks. We know that the people who are still with
Maria
us
is gonna
care
us.
About the Canadian Pan Am games. One of those people is producer Maria, who is begging for me to
just
end
squeaked.
The show.
I don't know if I've heard a human make that.
That was what we call a death rattle. thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Tom, for being here again. Thank you, Stefano. Always a pleasure to work with you. Shout out to our other partners in soccer who remain overseas or parts unknown in Kaylin Carr's case. Thank you, producer Maria and Anders. And, of course, thanks to all of you for being here. We will be back on Monday. We'll wrap up a mini weekend of matches in MLS, probably talk some U.S. national team as well. And get ready because we're going to have our, first best 11, second best 11, third best 11. Weeby's been texting me from Portugal about that all show long. Can't wait. We'll see you then.